Welcome to the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast. My name is Dar McDonald. It is July 3rd. We are changing our normal schedule slightly because of the 4th of July. Happy Independence Day to everybody celebrating. I am not celebrating because I am not in an independent place. I am in Canada. We still have the Queen on our money, and soon it will be the King. But normally we would put out a call for questions on Monday and then record on a Tuesday. That's our standard operating procedure. But because tomorrow is the 4th of July, we're recording on a Monday. So we did not have time to put out a call for questions. So a little bit different for us this week. So sorry about that. But we should be back to normal next week. Here to talk all the baseball world with me is my MLB Trade Rumors colleague, Anthony Franco. How are you doing, Anthony?
I'm good, Dara. How was Canada Day weekend?
Well, Canada Day weekend from a baseball perspective was terrible because the Blue Jays were swept by the Red Sox at home in front of the Canada Day crowds. But for me personally, it was good. Barbecues and being by the pool and all the classic cliched stuff. So that was great for me. So let's talk about baseball. We had a big post on the website this week. We did a second edition of our free agent power rankings, trying to figure out who is going to be the most sought after names this winter. We did this once a couple months ago. I think it was back in April. We did one and we did a June update, moved some of the names around based on the first couple months of the season. I think the interesting overarching thing is that there are nine pitchers out of the 10 names on the list, right, Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you would say 8.5 because we have Ohtani as one, and then Matt Chapman is the only, I guess you would say, pure hitter available, which comes back to, we've talked about before, how pitching heavy this upcoming free agent class is going to be. And it just keeps getting more and more so. I think we had Teoscar Hernandez on the April edition of the list that you mentioned, and he just hasn't had a good first couple of months in Seattle. So he fell off. Marcus Stroman, I think, was the one who took his place, and it just gets more and more pitching heavy.
It does indeed. And there was even some more pitchers that almost made the cut because we also discussed Sonny Gray and Eduardo Rodriguez and even Max Scherzer came up. So lots of pitching, but just an incredible dearth of position players in this class, at least at the top of the class, for sure. So we did a lot of, we had a lot of debate about exactly how to rank all of these various starting pitchers. Obviously, Shohei is in a class of his own, but we ended up with an interesting cluster of starting pitchers following him. How did you feel about the way things ended up, Anthony?
Yeah, it was interesting because I think when we started, Aaron Nola and Julio Urias were the top two non-Shohei pitchers for us a couple months ago, and they've both been just okay. I mean, Urias has had not a very good year, and then at the time of the list, he was on the injured list with a hamstring strain. He's back now, but he missed about a month. Nola's been healthy and solid, but not vintage Nola. His velocity's down a little bit. His swing and miss is down slightly. He's like more like a good mid-rotation guy as opposed to a borderline ace. And so we ended up coming out with Yoshi Yamamoto, number two, which is, I would guess, very atypical to have an NPV player that high on a potential free agent ranking list. I mean, obviously there's risk with any player who has no major league experience, but Yamamoto has just been very good for a long time in NPV. He's been probably the best pitcher in NPV for a couple of years now, and he's off to another really good start, and he's 25 years old, or not even 25, going to be 25 next month. And it just felt like with everyone else, kind of, again, aside from Ohtani, who is currently in the majors, sort of floundering this free agent class, that Yamamoto just keeps kind of getting pushed up by default.
Yeah, I think the age is sort of the key X factor with Yamamoto because, I mean, obviously some of these other pitchers on the list are very talented, but Nola is, he just turned 30 in June. So, you know, Giolito, I think, is going to be 29 this winter. It's just such a huge difference if you're thinking about making a significant investment in your rotation this winter. Like, Yamamoto is unproven, but he's only going to be 25. So you have like so much of his prime that you can buy, as opposed to maybe some of the other guys where there's, you know, if a guy's 30, there's a risk that maybe you get a couple good years and then it starts tapering off. Not always the case, but definitely something you have to factor in. So that was very interesting. We got Yamamoto all the way up at number two. And then the next starting pitcher, we had Chapman at three, but then the next starting pitcher is Giolito ahead of Urias and Nola. I think that surprised some people, Anthony.
Yeah, I think that even surprised us. I don't know, like when we were first kind of workshopping the list, I don't know if any of us had Giolito as high as four. I think we all kind of had him around five or six. And it just felt like the more we looked at it, again, we were kind of rounding down on Urias because of the injury and because he'd been homer prone early. And I think especially Tim Dirkus and Steve Adams were kind of increasingly down on Nola, just the like sort of, I mean, solid stability, but lack of impact production this year. And Giolito, again, also has that age factor that you mentioned. Giolito will turn 29, so he's a year younger. And just feels, I mean, he misses bats. He throws a bunch of strikes. He's very durable. He's shown like borderline, not Cy Young necessarily, but like down ballot Cy Young at his best. And he's probably going to, like, seems like he's trending in that direction again this year. And it just feels like he's kind of an up arrow guy, whereas all these other guys are either holding level or sort of seeing their stocks drop a little bit over the last couple of months.
Yeah, age is, again, I'm going to bring it up again with Urias because it's such a wild X factor here. The reason I think we had Urias so high in the first rankings is, you know, he'd had some major league success in his career, but he is still currently 26. He's turning 27 in August. That is an especially young age for a pitcher to reach free agency, because that means you have to be up to stick in the majors in your early 20s in order to get 6 years of service time by the time you're 27. So he is just, we talked a lot about how he is the most difficult one to peg because he's having a rough year. He's been injured. His ERA is currently 4.94 and he's got a FIP of 5.29. So obviously the results aren't there this year, a little bit of injury thing, but at the same time, he is still going to become a free agent at the age of 27. So if he finishes strong, then he could just shoot right up those power rankings. But it just seems like he's the one name on the list where the error bars are the widest. Does that seem fair to say?
Well, I think it's, yeah. So I'll use this as a kind of springboard to the one other guy who I think was the biggest topic of discussion for us. Urias definitely feels like a kind of wide error bar guy, just again, because of the injuries. I don't know that anyone from a pure performance perspective has wider error bars than Blake Snell, who might have been the guy that we had most differing opinions on. I had Snell 10th on my personal preference list. We ended up with him as a collective on 7. I think you had him. Did you have him in the top 5? Borderline top 5?
5 or 6, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so Snell was really tough for us because he's been, I mean, he has quite literally shown Cy Young upside. He won a Cy Young a couple years ago. He's been inconsistent. He doesn't work deep into starts. He walks a lot of guys. I think Tim made the point that as of like mid-May, he had an ERA above 5. And then over the last 6 weeks, he's been probably the best pitcher in baseball. And it's very much an up arrow at a time when, like I said, everyone, I guess, aside from Giolito, was kind of down arrow. Snell is trending very much upwards and maybe pushing into the 9-figure range. But I think Tim and I are more skeptical of the career-long kind of roller coaster ride that has been with Snell, whereas you and Steve, I think, were higher on him. And to your credit, you kind of pushed Snell onto the April list in the first place. I don't think we would have had him there if you didn't make the argument for him at the beginning of the season. So how sold are you on Snell as a long-term bet? And I guess kind of what goes into that decision?
He's so mercurial, you know, like you mentioned the Cy Young, but also like when we were talking about this, Steve, you know, put some arbitrary endpoints on, I think it was slightly over a year, because Snell had a really strong second half last year. And then he had a recent, you know, like you mentioned, he had been the best pitcher for the past 6 weeks. So I think Steve, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he put some, like, going back slightly over a year, you had a period of like 257 innings with an ERA under 3, something like that. So it's like he has the ability to get that upside And I think the factor for me is, like, obviously there's value in having a solid rotation member, like, you know, Jordan Montgomery, we debated a lot, who's also on the list. But I think when teams are spending big in free agency on a starting pitcher, they don't just want the season. They're also thinking about the postseason, right? And so you want to have, in the postseason, when you can shrink your rotation to three or four, those higher upside guys who can get to that ace level become more valuable than the, like, solid number three, solid number four guy, because if you get them hot at the right time, then that can be the difference between winning a World Series and not winning a World Series. And so I thought with somebody like Snell, who obviously he has those rough stretches where he looks lost, but because he has those ace-like stretches, that he just takes one team to sort of bank on that for his market to, like, take a jump. Does that sound reasonable or way out of line?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I see the case for it. I'm not at 100 million yet. I know, Steve, I think if you were asking to put down a number, I think you would set the over-under at 100 right now. To me, Snell's more in, like, the 80 to 85 range at the moment. I wouldn't close out 100 being possible if he has a strong second half. But I need a little more than, I mean, like you said, the overall track record is pretty good, but I need a little more of this, like, sort of elite level performance of the last couple of weeks. So I guess, where would you, if you had to choose right now, where would you set an over-under? Do you think he would get to nine figures right now?
I think right now he would, because I think when I think back to last winter, when guys like, you know, Taijuan Walker and Jameson Taillon were getting into that sort of 70, 80 million range, you know, I think Snell, the overall track record might be similar, but because of the higher upside, I think he can push beyond those guys. So I would think he could get into that nine figure range, but obviously it depends. Like, you know, he could completely move it the other way, as we've discussed, but I think he would have a little bit more appeal than the Taijuan Walkers and Jameson Taillons of the world. So I think he can get up there.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the last thing that we had kind of wanted to discuss as far as the free agents go, you mentioned at the beginning, it's just the lack of bats. Obviously Chapman is kind of our clear non-Otani number one bat. He strikes out a lot, but he's got a lot of power and he's an elite defensive third baseman. It just feels like a high floor guy who's going to get pushed up sort of by the market. But we had some hitters that we kind of kicked around at the back of the top 10. None of them ended up making it for us, but guys like Cody Bellinger, Harrison Bader, Jamer Candelario. I mentioned Teoscar earlier. Are there any of those guys that you think is going to be a particularly interesting free agent case?
Yeah, well, I stumped for Jamer Candelario. I was trying to get him on the list. I think I tried a little bit too hard and you guys talked me down a bit, but I think it was probably because we had just, it felt a little bit weird having nine pitchers. Obviously, Shohei's a little bit different than a typical pitcher, but nine pitchers and then Chapman. And so I was kind of stumping for Candelario a little bit, and I narrowed my focus to the last 3 years, and he becomes, like, really interesting if you just look at 2021 to the present, because obviously last year was dismal. He was below average in just about every respect, but, you know, in 2021, he was above average at the plate and solid defensive metrics. And, you know, he tallied 3.9 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs, just behind Matt Chapman's 4.1. You know, he had the bad 2022. But then you look at this year, Chapman's at 2.5 wins above replacement on Fangraphs, and Candy's also at 2.5. So I was starting to think, you know, how much separation is there really between Chapman? Like, if we're putting Chapman number three, that means we're sort of thinking he's going to go, like, well into the nine figure territory. So then how much further down do you put Candelario? And then you guys convinced me to move him down at least a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that you're right to point out that the performance differential between Chapman and Candelario is not that big right now. And Candy, I think, is a little bit younger as well. So he does have that going for him. To me, I just kept coming back to, and he's unquestionably been very good for Washington, but that we are just a couple months away from a Tigers team that was the worst offensive team in baseball last year, is again among, like, the bottom three this year. They non-tendered him and turned third base over to, like, some combination of Nick Maton and Ryan Kreidler instead. And he was projected for, I think it was like a $7 million arbitration salary last year. And obviously, given how well he's playing, I'm sure that's one that Detroit wishes they could take back, especially because Maton has not been good. But it just felt like, I don't know how high we want to push this guy over 3 months when literally as of last offseason, he was getting cut loose by one of the worst teams in baseball.
And not just that, but presumably the Tigers called the 29 other teams in the league and before non-tendering him and said, hey, does anybody want this guy at $7 million for, you know, a lottery ticket prospect in return? And again, presumably the other 29 teams all said no thanks. And so it's a great point that, you know, as of a few months ago, every team in the league thought that this guy wasn't worth $7 million plus a lottery ticket prospect. So that presumably puts a cap on how much they are then willing to spend on him in free agency. But I think he will make for a very interesting sort of buy low case this winter where, you know, especially for the teams that are looking at Chapman and, you know, Chapman's Scott Boras guy, I believe. So presumably they're going to be trying to get as much money as possible over a huge long term. So maybe they're going to be trying to get, you know, one of those big 7, 8, 9 year contracts. Who knows? We keep getting surprised by how long these contracts go. But then, you know, somebody is probably going to look at Candelario and say, you know, there's more risk there because he hasn't been as consistent as Chapman. But, you know, I think it'll be an interesting relative bargain gamble compared to Chapman.
Yeah, I think that'll definitely be interesting. And I guess we can use this kind of as a segue to talk about the trade market, which was sort of our next thing. But Chapman is almost certainly not getting traded, and the Blue Jays are going to tag him with the qualifying offer, which would mean that any team that signs him would have to forfeit a draft pick. Candelario, I would be shocked if he got a qualifying offer because the Nationals, I think, are almost guaranteed to trade him within the next month, and players trade him midseason can't get the QO. So, you know, we are kind of kicking around sort of trade candidates post that's going to come out hopefully this week, depending on work around the holiday. But Candelario I have right now at number 2 on that list, just as the top rental bat that I think is very, very likely to get moved.
Yeah, that's a great point. So he won't have the QO. Yeah, he's one of the few, you know, we've talked a lot on this podcast about how there's only a couple of clubs where you can point to them and say, obviously, they are sellers. And the Nationals are one of them. And Candelario is an impending free agent and he's playing well. So, yeah, he's almost a lock to be moved. So, you know, if he gets moved to a contender and has a strong finish with no qualifying offer attached, did we figure out? I think we were trying to think of, like, what's the biggest contract that somebody got after being non-tendered. Did we settle on Kyle Schwarber?
Yeah, I don't know that we did like exhaustive research on it, but I think Schwarber was our best guess that he ended up somewhere around, it was like just under 80, I think.
Right. So it is possible to, you know, turn your fortunes around and become at least an 8-figure guy. Okay, well, in addition to Jamer, so this post, you're putting together this list of trade candidates. We're hoping to have it out later this week. So this is a little bit of a preview for anyone who's listening to this prior to it being published. Anybody else you want to talk about as being sort of interesting highlights or borderline cases or anything like that?
I guess we can talk about this player and then springboard it into last week's big news, but Scott Barlow is going to feature very highly on this list. He's the Royals closer. He's arbitration eligible through 2024, and he's not having as good a year as he had over the last couple seasons. He was like a sub 2.5 ERA guy the last couple of years. He's around 4 this year, mostly because the walks are up, but he's striking out like a third of opposing hitters. I think he's very clearly like the Royals' best trade chip who I would expect them to actually move, especially considering they already moved the other one that I would have put in that list, Aroldis Chapman, last Friday. And Chapman to Texas was sort of a speculative fit, I think, for a while because he was an obvious candidate to move, and Texas has an awesome offense and a very good rotation and a mediocre bullpen. And so it fit kind of perfectly, but I think it still at least caught me off guard that it happened a month in advance. Kansas City got back Cole Ragans, who's like a upper minors starting pitching prospect, former first round pick, and a rookie ball outfielder in that one.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is July now, so the trade market is going to heat up. But yeah, it is a little bit unusual to see somebody jump the market a month early like this. But I guess if you're the Rangers, it's just so obvious that the bullpen is like the one weak spot, right? Like, I mean, the rotation has been good. The lineup has been crazy good. So, you know, why wait around another month to upgrade the bullpen? How do you feel about, like, Chapman's been great so far the first half, especially compared to last year. Do you think there's any red flags there, or do you think this is a good pickup for the Rangers?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, he doesn't throw strikes all that consistently, but he never really has. Even when he was an elite reliever in Cincinnati, it was always kind of, you lived with a couple walks because he would strike out half the guys he faces. I don't have as much faith in Chapman as I would have a couple years ago, but he is, it looks like, a very good high leverage arm. I guess if you were nitpicking, you could say that Texas already has a very good left-hander in Will Smith, and maybe a right-hander would have been an ideal fit back there. But honestly, I don't think that they're done adding to the bullpen. They gave up Ragans, and Chapman's not that expensive, and they still have a very deep farm system, and they're going to be motivated to add. So I fully expect that they'll continue adding to the bullpen and probably get a right-hander later on. Also, you kind of alluded to this a couple minutes ago, but the fact that Kansas City was one of the few teams that is very clearly out of it already. And so Chapman, you're kind of talking about a guy that you can jump the market on, whereas other teams that have even bullpen candidates who could be available, you know, like the White Sox or the Tigers, that are not playing well, but because of the way that the playoff system is set up and sort of the weak central divisions, still can kind of squint and see a path to potentially making the playoffs, and I think would probably prefer to hold off on any moves like that until later in the month.
Yeah, and the same on the other end of the deal, because like the Rangers are one of the few teams where if you're a team that's sort of like two games out of a playoff spot or whatever, you also don't necessarily want to be giving up your prospects early, because, you know, what if you get cold in June and then you fall out of it? So the Rangers are clear buyers. They're one of the stronger teams, and the Royals are one of the weaker teams. So all the ingredients lined up to make this happen. So speaking of some of the teams that are still trying to figure out what their plans are, the Padres chairman, Peter Seidler, man, the Padres, they are in a rough spot. They spent so much money this offseason to like really put their chips on the table. They've like traded away so many of their prospects, but they are 38-46 right now, 8 games out of a wild card spot. If you're Peter Seidler, what are you thinking right now, Anthony?
Well, apparently he's thinking we're going for it, which I think is the right thing for him to say a month in advance. I still think that he should be out there publicly expressing confidence in this team, even as they kind of repeatedly underachieve, just because, again, the NL playoff picture is still weak enough that you can kind of squint and see a path, and the team is so much more talented than a 38-46 team. I think that he should still be saying, yeah, we have half the season left and we fully expect to contend. Now, at the same time, I think that you also kind of internally have to be preparing contingency plans for if it just doesn't happen, because you can only go so long pointing to the talent on the roster before eventually they have to start winning some games. And it hasn't happened yet. And I think we talked about Snell earlier. Josh Hader is the best impending free agent reliever this year, and, you know, maybe going to break the record for reliever contracts. Like, those guys would bring you back an absolute haul at the deadline. So even if you're not talking about trading controllable players like a Juan Soto or something like that, at some point, I do think you have to at least consider the possibility, even if you don't say it publicly, that the team just doesn't play well enough and you have to earnestly shop Snell and Hader a couple weeks from now.
Yeah, that will be really fascinating to watch, because, you know, they are 8 games out of a playoff spot. And obviously we've talked about the talent on the roster, but also they have a plus 23 run differential. All the teams between them and a playoff spot are either negative or, you know, Philadelphia is only a plus 6. The Cubs are a plus 24, so just barely ahead of San Diego in the run differential category. But Pittsburgh, the Mets, Milwaukee, Cincinnati, they all have negative run differentials. And even Miami, who has the top wild card spot right now, has a negative run differential. So, you know, you could probably talk yourself into saying, hey, this team has the ingredients to get hot and, you know, we'll get right back in it. But it'll be a tricky calculus because, like you said, there might be a point like a couple weeks from now where, you know, maybe they get into like they're five games back. So it's like if you're five games out of a playoff spot, do you go for it? Or like you said, you have these enticing impending free agents. You know, you could get completely restock the farm system by trading Snell and Hader. So maybe you just punt the season. I don't know. It's going to be a very, very awkward spot for them, I think. We also heard from Matt Arnold of the Brewers this week, who gave sort of, you know, kind of a vague, like, yeah, we're gonna do stuff kind of answer, right?
Yeah, I mean, he did sort of categorically say that they weren't looking to trade Corbin Burns or Willy Adames, which isn't surprising. I mean, they're tied for the division lead, but it is still notable, I think, anytime you get a baseball operations leader come out and sort of name check guys that they are really just not interested in considering dealing. But yeah, the sort of idea that Milwaukee is going to be kind of a soft buyer, I think that all makes sense. I mean, they haven't played that well. They're six games over 500, but they've been outscored by 16 runs. But again, it's like the division is not that good. They're tied with Cincinnati for first place right now. And I think it's perfectly fair for the Brewers to look at their roster and look at the Reds roster, especially with the way the Cincinnati rotation is lined up, and assume that they'll outplay Cincinnati for the last 3 months of the season. So yeah, I think they should be looking to kind of upgrade around the margins. They need offensive help really bad. You know, I think first base would be kind of the thing for me that I would target, but really you can make a case for kind of anywhere in the infield aside from shortstop, and even Adames isn't playing that well, but they're not going to replace him. But the infield just across the board hasn't played well. Luis Arias struggled badly enough that they optioned him a couple days ago. Bryce Terang has played well defensively, but hasn't really hit as a rookie. It's just, I think they would be a great fit for Condelario in particular, but really kind of any sort of infield upgrades.
Yep, that all makes sense. I mean, yeah, why wouldn't they? Like you said, they're currently tied for the division lead, and then even in the wild card, they're only a game back. So, you know, they're right in it. But yeah, I think a lot of people look into the Brewers and sort of see what they want to see, especially since the Hader trade last year, where people who cheer for opposing teams sort of look at them and think, oh, even though they're in it, they might trade Burns or Adames or something like that. But it went so poorly last year that I don't think that they're going to do it this time around. And it's a different calculation when it's like Hader is a reliever. So you could sort of talk yourself into the fact, like last year they talked themselves into the fact that, you know, getting Rodgers back in that deal sort of made it not that big of a drop. So yeah, I don't think Burns or Adames are going anywhere. That all makes perfect sense. Okay, we are running out of time here, so I'm going to wrap it up. Sorry for not taking any listener questions this week. We were just sort of scrambling around the holiday time, so we just squeezed this in. So we didn't really have time to reach out and get your questions. But we should be back on a normal schedule next week and going forward. So, like I said, our standard operating procedure is on Monday. I'll reach out to y'all and ask what's on your mind. But it is July now. The All-Star game and the draft are coming up, and then trade season is going to be wild for a few weeks. And I know you're going to be coming to MLBTradeRumors.com, sign up for the newsletter and get those rumors in your email. Listen to this podcast, sign up for the front office package, like and subscribe and give us the star ratings and all the things that you like to do to help us out. And we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Remember to visit MLBTradeRumors.com and follow us on Twitter at MLBTradeRumors.